Hey, I'm just letting you know that in February 2023, I am speaking at my friend Andy Storch's event in Sonoma, California. It's called the Talent Development Think Tank. I'll be running a session on marketing your workshops. And on day three, I'll be hosting the 2-hour workshop blueprint session. I'd love to see you there. Head on over to leannehughes.com/thinktank. Enjoy the episode. Coming up next on Leanne Hughes's Work and Live Large.
For any business leader who wants rapid business growth for his or her business, the only strategy choice that you have is disruption. It is the only way that you're actually going to be able to grow a business fast.
Life's too short. You're here to work and live large. Here's your host with nothing to lose, Leanne Hughes.
G'day and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes. It's great to be back for another episode of Work and Live Large. That phrase, work and live large, what does it even mean? I think it means different things to different people. And as this show progresses, you get an insight into what it does mean for various people around the world and for myself as well. Today's focus is all about the work large part, about going all in, about being bold. Instead of being defensive and waiting, what can you do to actually disrupt? There is a lot of disruption going on in the world at the moment. I'm recording this in March. We've just had huge amounts of rainfall in Brisbane and it's been flooded and my heart just goes out to all local businesses. Not only that, at a micro level where I am, but at just a global level in terms of Ukraine and the world and COVID, all of it. It's huge, right? There's been unprecedented. I'm dropping it again now. I apologize. Just the level of disruption. What can you do about it? Well, instead of getting defensive, my guest today talks about being the disruptor. Before I share more details on today's conversation, I just want to say again, thank you so much. It's the early days of this new show. I really appreciate all of you for jumping in, downloading it, listening to it, sharing it, providing feedback. It really does help. And as I said, the show will evolve as we go through. We had the first four episodes have all been solo episodes, and today is where I jump into the host role and have a great conversation. I guess it's more of a behind the scenes type of fireside chat. It's less podcast interview style and more of a conversation because, well, okay, let's be frank. I'm kind of picking the brains of this person. I've been in a growth cycle mastermind for the last 6 to 8 months, I think. And so every 2 weeks, our group, we've got global consultants around the world and we catch up all together. And sometimes Alan Weiss will jump in. And every time I jump on the call, I feel incredibly inspired. My perspective and mind is definitely mind blown with new insights. And Steve Leiston is part of that group. Every time he talks, I kind of want to sit back. Sometimes it provokes a reaction. I think, I don't know if what I think about that. Sometimes I just want to dive deeper and go, what did you mean when you said that? And so I thought, what better way than to ask him those questions than getting him on this show, recording it and sharing it with all of you, particularly because Steve really encourages his leaders and the people that he works with to be the disruptor. And what I learned from this conversation is that we all have the ability within ourselves to do it. Another thing that Steve shares in this episode that reminds me of life in corporate is that sometimes, and again, speaking from my own experience, I know that I was just playing by the rule book and going through meetings and waiting on delegations of authorities and creating presentation decks and trying to convince people. And what I discovered by using the usual channels to communicate is that sometimes just momentum stopped. It crawled and then it stopped. And for me, disruption is actually, and Steve mentions the word rapid a lot in this conversation, is actually using speed, using urgency, getting excited and being bold. And in the process of doing that, you actually encourage and rally the people around you as well. That's inspiring because I think a lot of us are just sort of waiting around for someone else to make the move. And if you're the person making the move, you can have a huge impact. Who is Steve? Steve Leiston is the CEO and founder of Relanza Incorporated. He's the author of Rapid Organizational Change and is one of those rare international experts who bridges Western and Japanese business thinking. And I talk about that with him straight up. Steve is fluent in Japanese and French, and he's attracted clients from businesses such as Adidas, Michelin, AIG Group, and Barilla. Steve helps both Japanese and international companies create their own new realities. He also gets you obsessed with cycling. So one of the reasons I got a Peloton is because Steve cycles like up to 3 hours or even more every morning. I hope you enjoy this behind-the-scenes conversation, and do reach out to Steve if you found anything that he said thought-provoking or interesting. You can find his contact details in the show notes over at podcast.leannehughes.com. Enjoy the listen and be bold. I always love hearing how people got started in their profession. Can you share what you do today and how you also got that start?
Gosh, I have no idea how I got to where I am. I mean, this what I'm doing today, I would have never imagined. But I will say that at a very young age, as a teenager at age 13, I had an interest in foreign languages, foreign countries, and I began to teach myself German. I began to teach myself French. I skipped most of the years of French in high school. I did all, the whole five-year program in 2 years, and then went to France for my third year of high school. And so I realized that I'm good at languages. I really like this. So I knew I was going to be doing some sort of international career. I didn't know exactly what that would be. But through this circuitous route, this is where I have ended up. And I have my own consulting business here in Japan.
What brought you to Japan, Steve?
And I did marry a Japanese, but it was also just a fascination with a business culture in Japan more than anything else. I mean, when I was a university student, I knew a lot of people who were very interested in Japan, but a lot of it was for cultural. They liked the history, they liked the arts, they liked the aesthetic. But for me, the Japanese just fascinated me just as a culture, the business culture did. And it just seemed like everything that I was reading is that the Japanese culture was, what would you say, opaque. Japan was such a black box, and there were all these books about the secret to the Japanese mentality and way of doing business. I thought, come on, this has got to be crazy. And so I devoted myself to really learning the language and understanding the people, because I felt like no people can be this opaque. And I think I was right.
Wow. I'm really keen to find out more about that, because you're right. I remember at university, we'd hear a lot about Japanese manufacturing, and Toyota was always put up as like the gold star of business as well. I guess what would attract me to Japan would definitely be the food. I haven't been to Japan yet. It's definitely on the bucket list. Now, Steve, we meet through a group called Growth Cycle, and I've been learning so much from you in terms of like, you just blow my mind when it comes to the way that you think about business as well. Something that I know you've been focusing on recently is a concept of charismatic. Can you just tell us what that actually means to you, and what really is has triggered this sort of your focus on this concept?
Yeah, well, look, my expertise is in rapid business growth, how to achieve rapid business growth. My clients are all CEOs of companies, mostly here in Japan. And so a lot of what I do in terms of advising people is all around strategy and how you get people to change, how you lead the business, how you push things. But what became very clear to me is that rapid growth is all about disruption. Anytime I'm dealing with clients who want to grow rapidly or been successful at doing it, they've always done it through disruptive strategy. And it occurred to me when I was asked if I could help one of my clients with disruptive strategy development. And I realized this is what I've been doing for the last 10 years.
Wow.
And so as I started to talk about that specifically and define it and develop these frameworks around it, kind of help people through this, I realized I should be writing a book on this. Because this is what it's all about. Charismatic disruption came about from kind of a different concept. And I actually got the idea from you, you know, because you were talking about charismatic change, and you're talking about charismatic this, charismatic that. The idea came about when a vice president at this client company that I was consulting to approached me and said he was really worried about not being able to attract the right kind of staff to his division. The company is already having trouble attracting really talented managers, and that if they pursued a strategy of disruption, it might turn people off and move them away. And I said, that's absurd. And I said to him, look, what you need is not disruption. You need charismatic disruption. And there's no reason why you can't do that. And it just came out. And so I began to talk about what that actually means.
This is why I love podcast conversations as well, is because sometimes we can be using post-it notes and like really racking our brain internally, but it's through a conversation where you're sort of forced to come up with something. And that phrase, it hit you. Obviously, it would have hit the person that you were talking to for you to continue on with this as well. Disruption, though, as a concept, for anyone listening to the show, how would you define disruption?
Well, the thing about disruption is it always displaces some other business. It always displaces some conventional way of doing things. It's extremely fast. It's unforgiving. It's extremely confrontational. And if you want to disrupt, you really have to have chutzpah. You know, so this is a Hebrew term or a Yiddish term, but it means having this kind of completely unapologetic boldness. It can be used in a negative sense, but it can also be used in a positive sense. And in this case, it's really about having positive chutzpah, where you're being bold and you're displacing some of their business. And I would say that for any business leader who wants rapid business growth for his or her business, the only strategy choice that you have is disruption. It is the only way that you're actually going to be able to grow a business fast. And any business that is disruptive will automatically have rapid business growth if they do it right.
If they do, yeah. And I think because of the last couple of years, we have faced incredible disruption. And so I think what I'm hearing from a lot of leaders and what I'm sort of seeing on LinkedIn, you know, posts like that are, we've been disrupted. It's all about just staying resilient now and staying the course and settling in. And it's great that we're just surviving. But you seem to have a different approach to that. But no, you need to keep disrupting. So because of what we've been through, how can you encourage leaders to continue that bold disruption and to be in your face as opposed to, I guess, maybe the fatigue people are feeling on being disrupted so much?
Look, some years back, I was a member of the Economist Corporate Network. I think it's a great organization. They've got, they're all over the world, even in Australia, but I'm a member here in Japan. And they were doing an event with some guest speakers, a nice panel discussion on disruption. The whole focus was on how do you deal with disruption? How do you deal with competitors who are entrants that are looking to disrupt your business? How do you deal with the disruption going on in the market? And it was a completely kind of reactive, kind of defensive approach. And I had to speak up. And I said, look, you know, we're looking at this, you know, in completely the wrong way. Because I can guarantee you right now that just all of you are talking about what is it that I can do in order to defend my business against disruptors in the marketplace. Somewhere in Tokyo at this very moment, there is a parallel event where there are people talking about how to disrupt your business. And that's what we should be talking about. You're all worried about these entrepreneurs. They're not nearly as well resourced as a lot of the companies who are here today, because they're mostly large corporates, these incumbents. We're the ones who should be disrupting. You're the ones who should be disrupting. Disrupting is not something that you try to defend against. It is something that you instigate. It's something that you do. And that should be how you should be thinking about disruption. When you look at disruption, say, from a crisis, an external one, like we've got with COVID, the thing about external disruption is that it's volatility. I mean, how would it be best to say this? Is volatility is not something that you try to manage. It's something that you weaponize. Mm. You know, volatility is your friend. Mm. And so... so for example, among some of my clients, the kinds of things that they did when volatility from COVID would hit, for some of them who were dealing with large incumbent Japanese competitors who could have massive sales forces, whereas my clients may be more thin on the ground in terms of the sales force, the competitors could just flood the field with salespeople in order to outdo them. Well, all of a sudden with COVID, people couldn't go out and have these in-person meetings. You had to be doing things remotely. You had to be really smart. That was a huge opportunity. It leveled the playing field. And for my clients who had already started on ways of working smart with a lean sales force, they were in a tremendous position to completely reverse where they are with their competitors. They're kind of a revolution where the underdog is immediately thrust to the top and the dominant players are suddenly cast down to the bottom. But this is how you need to be thinking about disruption, external disruption, that it is something that you weaponize. You use volatility as an aggressive weapon in order to dominate.
I love that you use the word the underdog in Australia, as we just love a good underdog story. And the fact that you can use disruption as a weapon is great. The other thing, just talking about the cultural differences as well, because I haven't been to Japan, but what I have heard is that it's a very respectful culture, right? So what you're talking about is perhaps, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking about this wrong, but I'd love you to clarify how you're helping leaders do this. You're talking about bold, in your face. And when I think of respect, I think of maybe a little of the opposite of that. Is that, how are you helping leaders sort of disrupt their own mindset and way of thinking around respect? You can be respectfully disruptive.
Well, no, you cannot.
Okay. Tell me more.
You cannot be respectfully disruptive.
No. You gotta have to. What about the people pleasers in the audience? Yeah, no, continue.
But look, I mean, sure, Japan has this culture where harmony is kind of a cultural value. It's built into the language. You don't want to overtly be confrontational with people. But this is not unique to Japan. We see this in Australia. People want to be congenial. You don't want to be the tall poppy that gets its head cut off. You see it even in American companies as well, where you want people who play well together. This is everywhere. But the thing is that you've got to get over, and it can be hard to get over that if you're not used to it, whether you're a leader in a Japanese organization or in a Japanese company, or if you're a leader elsewhere in the world, it does not matter. But the idea is you got to get comfortable with it. And the thing is that there's absolutely nothing inherent in Japanese culture that keeps people from being disruptive if that's what they want to do. If you look at companies like fast retailing, and you might know this better as the Uniqlo brand, which is all over the world, right? So that was founded by Tadashi Yanai, who completely disrupted the apparel market in Japan, which was very clear. It was protected, still is to a large degree. That, you know, it has government protection with tariffs and things like that. And he completely disrupted that industry to the dismay of everyone else in the industry. I mean, he became hated because of that. But he didn't care. He had that kind of chutzpah, and he certainly didn't do this respectfully, the kind of collusive practices of his peers, and he used that against them. And so to say that because Japanese culture is so respectful that somehow this is more difficult than anywhere else, that's not true. You see this in other countries. It's really a matter of having the gumption as a leader to be disruptive.
Yeah, I'm actually wearing a Uniqlo top right now. So, I mean, he's one of my favorite stores. Absolutely love it. So we'll put a link in the show notes.
I've got a Uniqlo cashmere sweater. Yes.
There we go. Look at us. Hey, I love that phrase, just get over it, right, and develop that. How can we do that? If we're a lead, I'm like, yeah, I want to be more disruptive this year. What are some steps? Like, what can I do to start that immediately? Talk about rapid change and rapid growth. What can we do to disrupt ourselves?
Well, Any time that you want to disrupt something externally, you have to disrupt something internally. Mm-hmm. There's something that you have to stop doing in order to make this happen. And in some ways, that can be the hardest thing to do, particularly if you have an established company. Because for some of my clients who do have established companies, a lot of things that they have to give up in order to grow fast is they have to cut things like profitable business lines. They might have to cut successful brands that maybe may have lived beyond their use-by date, things that can be very painful to disrupt in your own business, things that can be painful to stop doing, saying that you're not going to sell through your distributors any longer. That can be really disruptive. It can be really scary, particularly if you feel like you're not going to be able to go direct and immediately get the cash flow that you need when your distributors get angry and take revenge on you by no longer handling your products while you're making the transition. But this is the kind of thing that really, really happens. But you have to be willing, you have to have the courage to be able to disrupt yourself in some way. And it's not just you as a leader. Particularly when you have an organization, you got to look at helping your staff through that transition as well. Sometimes you got to force them. Sometimes you got to get rid of the people who just won't be able to make the transition. But there will be people who will be asking themselves, why didn't we do this earlier? You will always have a kind of vanguard on your staff who will be supportive. You want to cultivate that part of your staff, and that's what you want to do. But I think that this is really critical, that it's really a matter of having the courage and the gumption to do it. More than anything else. And it really does start disrupting yourself.
Yeah. There's a really good TED video. I think it was a speaker in China. He was called, basically for 100 days, his goal was just to get rejected. So he just went out and asked for ridiculous things. And the first couple of days, it was really bad. And then he got used to it and realized, well, actually, life isn't so bad, right? And so once you can get past that fear, it becomes a bit easier. It's really interesting that loss aversion you talk about as well, such a strong driver for not cutting things off. I remember working probably about 10 years ago, one of my boss, we actually stopped all advertising just to focus on word of mouth. And I thought he was crazy, but business tripled that year as a result of making that call and moving the energy and focus. So there's a lot in that. Now, Steve, I want to talk to you. You are an avid cyclist and you take photos. Can you share? We talk about disrupting yourself and taking things on. You talked about cycling. I've started indoor cycling now as a result of just talking to you every couple of weeks. What does that do for your own mindset, your productivity in being a consultant, do you think?
First of all, I think cycling is an excellent sport. I know you're an avid runner. Cycling is one of these things that, you know, I do road cycling. But it's one of these sports that combines a lot of really, really good things. You get the endorphin boost that you get from run, which you're very familiar with, I am sure. But you're also exercising your muscles. When you think about, even more so than running, because you think about what it takes to climb a mountain, and I do hill climbing every day when I cycle, you're exercising those muscles. So you get that drive that people get when they're working out at the gym. But on top of all of that, there's that excitement that you just don't get from other sports. There's the speed that you get with a bike when you're doing a long descent of a winding mountain road, or you're cruising at a really fast speed on the road in the open air. There's a kind of excitement, the same kind of excitement you might get from a motorcycle or a sports car. So it combines all of those things. What I find, at least for my business, is I get my best ideas when I'm on the bike. Most of my thinking, sometimes I write whole articles in my head when I'm biking. If there's some problem that I'm working on, I usually think about it a little bit, and then I get on the bike, and by the time I get home, I know what I want to do. I think it's a tremendous boon to any type of activity that you do. When it comes to photography, that's really about exercising creative juice. And for me, the kind of photography that I like is street photography. And that is a real art. And there are people who are extremely good at it. People have been practicing for decades, and some very famous artists in this area. But it requires that you're constantly aware of your surroundings on the street. Because anything that you see, whatever you see in the frame, is gone in an instant. You have to have the courage to take the picture. And a lot of times you're also taking pictures of people, not necessarily with their permission, and you're doing it from very up close. You have to have the courage to be able to do that. Mm. And so it forces you to be in the moment. It forces you to look. It's forcing you to be very aware of your surroundings all the time. And these are all the types of things that you need, all of the types of skills that you need for doing something like innovation. But you have to be aware of what's going on around you. You have to be able to see things. And as soon as you see them, you have to be willing, to release the shutter, take the shot, and to do it fearlessly. Innovation and creativity is all about that. Mm-hmm. So in my view, things like innovation, whether disruptive innovation or any other type of innovation like creativity, mm-hmm. you have to exercise it regularly if you want to develop it, if you want to maintain it. And whether it's innovation or discipline or creativity, it is a muscle. If you exercise it and practice it in one area, you can use it in another. And so if you're innovative in your art, you'll also be innovative in your business.
I love it. It's just the perfect, I can sense your passion coming over as well. And I totally agree with you on, I guess the good thing about running is I get, like you, Steve, so many ideas as I go running, but I can actually just pause and write something in my notes on my phone. I think it's a bit harder to do on your bike unless you can get something transcribed as you go. But the courage as well that you talk about with street photography, what I was reminded of is I find it very easily just to shoot a video and at home on my own, but sometimes I challenge myself and I'll go out for a walk and I'll start shooting a video and I know there's people around me. And honestly, I have to stop sometimes. And I've really been telling myself, just keep it going. No one else cares. Just get over it. And like you said, it's just a muscle. And if we do it daily and get used to it, what else can we do? Which is really exciting. Is there anything else you'd like to share about disruption before I move on to the rapid round?
No, why don't we go ahead to the rapid round?
Sounds good. All right. Okay. Now, Steve, what is a book that has shaped the way that you think?
Gosh, well, I often say that, people ask me, what's the best business book that you've read that you would recommend that I read? And I tell them something that usually surprises them. I tell them the book that had the most influence on how I think about business was Father Gorio by Balzac.
I've never heard
of it. Which I read in French.
Okay. So why? Why? Tell us.
Well, I mean, the thing about Balzac is he was really an observer, almost like a sociologist. I mean, this 19th century French romantic writer, but he would observe behaviors of people. And Father Gorio is probably one of his most famous works, but it revolves around some characters, in particularly a young man named Rastignac, who was noble, but whose family lost money, who was just determined to succeed, and just all about everything that he did in Paris and how he lived and, how he wanted to succeed. The thing that really surprised me in that book as I was reading it, and he was writing about Parisian society in the 19th century, I was living in Paris for at the time, and I realized that very little had changed. So much about the city was the same, and the way people would think, the way they would do things was really all the same. And so I realized that there were kind of these, when it comes to people striving for success or what they're looking for in business or success and failure and change, a lot of these things have not changed at all. And I could recognize this, even being in Paris 200 years after the book was supposedly taking place.
So good. All right. Well, I'll have to check it out. Hopefully there's an English translation there. Yes. Great. What is a favorite app or tool that we should download right away? A tool that we just cannot live without, or that you can't live without?
I think you should download a pen and paper, because that's fundamental that everyone really ought to have. I don't really believe in tools. I think that technology is something that can enhance what you're already doing pretty well. But I think you got to start with pen and paper. And then you can start looking at what is it that's going to make this easier or faster for me. I think too often people rely on the app to do the work for them, and it just doesn't work.
Excellent. Thank you. What's the song that gets you fired up or motivated?
Well, actually, music is not something that motivates me. I use music for inspiration. It's not something that I use to get fired up. But the music that I'm listening to right now is actually something that my son got me into. He's 14 years old. He's really into piano, jazz piano in particular, and he's playing this piece. And I'm like, what is that? And it was a piece by a guy named Art Blakey. It probably goes back to the 1950s or so. And so I started listening to that. And I find that really inspirational, to be listening to things that I would never come across if it hadn't been for the interests of my son.
There we go. And now listeners, and not myself, we'll find it, we'll listen to it, spread the word. And finally, a favorite quote that you tend to live by or you just want to share with our audience?
Yeah, well, you know, I've got two here that I kind of live by. And the first is from Woody Allen. He said, 90% of success is showing up, you know, which is something that
I love that. Yeah. Yeah.
But then there's another quote, you got to have chutzpah. And that's from my grandmother. And that really defines what I believe about life.
Steve, that's very powerful. And I think it's really linked to what you spoke about earlier in, I've got to pronounce it right. Is it chutzpah, right?
Chutzpah,
yes. Pronounce that, but spelt with a CH as well. Such a great phrase to live by. And that Woody Allen quote, I completely agree with it. Every time I'm sort of like, stuck, it's like, Leanne, if you just show up and let your experience sort of take you forward, like you can't. Yeah, just get to the event, just get to the stage and you'll be fine. Steve, thank you so much for sharing your insights today. If our listeners would like to contact you, where should we send them?
Well, look, my website is relansa.co.jp. So this is Relansa Japan. You can contact me via my website, but in the show notes, you can put down my email contact in case people want to get in touch with me directly that way.
Fantastic. Thanks so much. It's great to chat to you.
Thanks, Leanne. Real pleasure.
You're the best. Thank you so much for tuning in to Work and Live Large. I really appreciate you. If you know someone in your network and you think, oh my gosh, they've got so much potential, like I want them to live and work larger, send them this episode. I think they might appreciate it. I also appreciate hearing from you, your feedback, your thoughts, your questions, anything. You can shoot me an email, hello@leannehughes.com, or find me on LinkedIn, just search for Leanne Hughes. Stay up to date with all the episodes by heading on over to leannehughes.com/subscribe, and all the best with your week as you go around living it up.